Okay, good afternoon. Today we are moving to the study of sound propagation indoors, that is inside rooms. We will deal both with rooms which have special function like classroom, like this one, like a concert hall, a theater, a drama theater, a cinema. These are called rooms with acoustical function. But we are also dealing with noise problem at the workplace, for example, or in other building where people is exposed to loud noise for the whole workday. Another very noisy indoor environment are elementary school or pre-elementary school, like scuole dell'infanzia, you know. In practice, when this happens, we are only interested in sound pressure level and not so much in acoustical quality. While for the first type of indoor environment, the sound pressure level is not the most relevant parameter. What matters for hearing well speech or music are other kind of parameters which are related to sound quality. We are dealing with this type of problem of acoustical quality in the second part of the course which you are following. For today, we will only worry about how loud is the sound inside the room, and not how good is, for example, speech intelligibility or music perception. These facts related to speech quality and music quality are something which we are going to study only in the last part of the course, when all of you will have reached much deeper knowledge about acoustical phenomenon inside rooms. So for today, we start studying what happens when we place a sound source inside a closed room. Okay. And the case we are studying now is a closed space, which is not necessarily a room in the traditional sense. It can be a cavern, it can be a boat, it can be an aircraft, it can be inside a car, a vehicle, a car compartment. So in any kind of closed space, you have the sound propagating in a quite peculiar way, very different than what happens outdoors. In the past lesson with my colleagues, you have learned how the sound propagates in the environment outside buildings, and there is a free propagation, what's called usually free field, because there is no strong interaction with the environment. There can be the case of obstacles, that's always true. You can get reflection from obstacles, or you can get shielding by, for example, noise screen, noise barriers. But mostly the propagation is free, either with spherical or cylindrical waves. Instead, inside an enclosed space, you still have a free field propagation for what is called the direct sound, the direct wave. So the wave traveling directly from the source straight to the ears of the receiver. This still propagates with spherical waveform if it is a point source, or with cylindrical waveform if it is a line source. But this is just the direct sound. It is not the only sound which comes from the source to the receiver. It is not even the most relevant sound. In most cases, much more energy arrives to the receiver than the direct sound, because there are other significant contributions due to room reflection. The sound bouncing over the walls, the ceiling, the floor, even with multiple paths. Here this red line show you a first order reflection, that is sound which is bouncing over just one surface. But of course, nothing forbids to have even multiple reflections. Sound bouncing several times between two surfaces before reaching the receiver. The reflection pattern can be quite complex. You can bounce several times with different and strange trajectories before finding the impact with the receiver. So, what happens inside the room is what is called an acoustic billiard with multiple reflections, which can follow the specular reflection law or can not follow the specular reflection law. This is something which we are going to study later, the kind of reflection, how much it is specular, how much it is diffuse. What I want you to think is just keep a strict relationship with light, with how light propagates inside the room. Light can reflect specularly if you have a mirror, or can reflect diffusely, like in a white wall, like those walls here around us. Here the reflection is diffuse. You don't see a reflected image in the wall. The wall is just smooth and flat, and you don't see anything in the wall. But still, light energy is bouncing over the wall and coming back. Those walls and ceilings are white, and they cause the average lighting inside this room to be quite high. So with a little number of lamps, we get a lot of looks on your table, because all those reflections over white walls is causing more light inside the room. The same happens with sound. As the sound reflects over walls, the sound level at the receiver is much higher than if the walls are not here, if you are outdoors at the same distance from the source. So there is a significant contribution to the sound field due to reflected waves. And the amount of energy being reflected depends on the nature of the surface. There are materials which are strongly reflective, so they reflect back almost 100% of the energy impinging over there. But there are other materials which are absorbent, like for example a thick carpet, or soft materials like mineral wool. On this material, only a small fraction of the impinging energy is coming back. Those materials are called acoustic absorbers, and they can be very useful for reducing the noise, the sound pressure level inside the room, by reducing the amount of reflected energy. Now we want to move from this qualitative description to a quantitative description. The first thing which I have to introduce here is the chart shown here below, which is a very important representation of what happens inside the room, and this is called the impulse response of the room. What is shown here more precisely is an energetic impulse response, because in the ordinate we are not just looking at the wave pressure waveform, but at the sound pressure level in decibel. And we know that the sound pressure level has an energetical meaning, is related to the RMS value of sound pressure. So what is plotted here is actually acoustical energy in decibel versus time. In the abscissa here you have time in second. What happens? Think that your source is not radiating a continuous sound, like a pure tone, or like a wideband noise, white noise. No, the source is radiating an impulse, like this, like hand clapping, you know. So a very short pulse. this short pulse has a length of, say, 1 or 2 milliseconds. Very, very short in time. So, if you are outdoor, there is no room, you will see only the first peak here, the direct sound. You only see one peak, and then it should be silenced as before. Because you are outdoors, there are no room reflection. You hear this pulse, and that's all. Everything is finished there. There is nothing after the pulse. But when instead you are inside the room, you don't hear only the direct sound. That is just the first sound you hear. But after a while, depending on the longer distance to travel, the first room reflection arrives, and this is this one. You see that it is not very loud actually, because probably this ceiling here was made of a material which is quite absorbent, is not very reflective. So the sound pressure level is much lower than the direct sound, but the delay is short because that was the first reflection. Another time passes and a second reflection comes, which made a longer path. For example, bouncing on the floor or bouncing on a side wall. I don't know, from this chart, you know the energy is arriving, but you don't know from which direction the sound is coming. Pressure is an omnidirectional quantity. It doesn't tell you the direction of arrival. In the last part of the course, we will see a technology for showing you the sound intensity vector, and that carries also the information of direction. But if you only look at pressure, sound pressure level, you don't have any information on the direction of arrival of sound. You only know the delay. But with the help of some geometrical construction, knowing that these times are proportional to distance, through the speed of sound, which is constant, you can guess from where at each reflection is coming. Because every path has a different length, and the length translates in a time of fly, is called. The time taken by the sound to follow this path and eventually arrive to the receiver. Okay? So what you see here in this chart is a chart of the room reflection. Every peak you see here is one discrete room reflection making longer and longer path, and of course arriving weaker and weaker and weaker because they travel at a longer distance, so the geometrical divergence is reducing the sound level. But also the absorption of the surface of the materials covering these surfaces are causing additional absorption, so additional sound reduction. What you see here is the energetic impulse response, also called reflectogram, because it is a graph of reflection. This chart contains a lot of information. For today, we will only deal with the energetic fact. How much energy is contained in this tail, in this decay, after the direct sound? If the same decay was weaker like this, then the total contribution to the total sound pressure level will be very weak. And in practice, at the receiver, you will get a total energy which is almost the same as the direct sound, because the contribution of a reverberant tail, like this one here, is negligible, is too weak compared to the direct sound. Instead, this blue chart here is showing a case which is opposite. Here we have a lot of reflective energy. We have so much reflected energy, which probably it is the direct sound which is completely negligible in this case. So we can see that in practice the total sound pressure level inside the room can be given by, in general, the sum of two contributions, the direct sound and the reflected sound. In some cases, the direct sound dominates. In some cases, the reflected sound dominates. In the general case, you have to take into account both contributions. Okay? Now, let's look at the properties of the materials, of the surfaces bounding, surrounding the room, defining the boundaries of the room. We see here a wall separating probably this room here from another room here on the right. It's probably like the wall of this room which separates us from the other classroom next to our one. When the sound of my voice impinges over the wall, it goes against the wall, and here there are three possibilities. Some fraction of the incoming energy, of the energy impinging over the wall, is being reflected back in this room, and this is the energy in which we are interested today, the energy which stays in the room because it reflects back inside our room. Some energy is dissipated in heat inside the material which is the wall. There is some mineral wall probably inside these gypsum walls. And the mineral wool is a material which dissipates sound energy into air. So that energy is really absorbed, is gone, it's air now, is not acoustical energy anymore, is dead for us as acousticians. This energy disappears. Another fraction of energy passes through the wall and can be heard in the room next this one. If you go in the other room and there is silence there, you can still hear my voice. It will be attenuated, it will be much weaker than in this room, but it is still audible, as you can hear the sound of a truck outdoors or an aircraft passing over the ceiling. The sound passes through the structure and we can hear it through the structure. So our energy divided in three contributions: the reflected energy, the absorbed energy, and the transmitted energy. Okay? That's very typical. Also for light the same happens. Also for electromagnetic waves like radio waves, they make the same. When they go over a surface, part is reflected, part is absorbed, and part is transmitted. We can define three numerical coefficients by taking the ratio of the reflected energy over the impinging energy, of the absorbed energy over the impinging energy, and the transmitted energy over the incident energy. The sum of these three coefficients, which are called the reflection coefficient, R, the absorption coefficient, A, and the transmission coefficient, T, the sum of the three, of course, must be one, because the energy conservation principle holds, it always holds. And so it can never be that the sum of the three can exceed unity. Okay? And each of these three coefficients is bounded between 0 and 1. A perfectly reflecting surface will have R equal 1, and of course A and T will become 0. An open window or an open door instead is completely transmissive. T will be 1 in an open window because all the energy going to the window passes through and go out, And of course, A and R again will be zero, because the sum must always be one. Well, what happens in practice is that acousticians don't employ any of these three numbers. None of them is in current usage. We only use the so-called apparent acoustic absorption coefficient alpha, Greek letter alpha, which is defined as 1 minus R. So it expresses the energy which is not being reflected. That energy which is not being reflected can be either really absorbed, A, or it can be transmitted. So in practice, alpha is the sum of A and T. Okay? This means, coming back to the example before, if you have an open window, how large is the absorption coefficient of an open window? In terms of alpha, an open window has an absorption coefficient alpha equal 1, because T is equal 1. And in alpha, both A and T contribute the same. If you have a material which has very poor insulation capability, because it leaves the sound to pass through, like for example some cloth or some other soft material, excuse me, through such a soft material, most energy go in the other room. This, for us, is a good absorption material, because it does not reflect back the sound. While we are dealing only in what happened in the source room, in the room where the sound source is here, is on the left of this room. So we are dealing only with the reflected energy. What happens of the energy which is not reflected doesn't bother us. We are not worried if the energy which is not reflected is actually absorbed or is actually transmitted. Who cares? It's not coming here, and I am happy if it doesn't come back. Wherever it is going, okay? This is the concept of apparent acoustic absorption. It means that the sound energy could not really be absorbed. It could be transmitted, and for us it is the same, because we are not really concerned of what happens to the energy which is not reflected back. So, for the evaluation of the acoustical field inside a room, inside the same room where the sound source is working, all we need to know about the materials covering the surface, the floor and the ceiling and every object inside the room is how large is the apparent absorbing coefficient alpha. If alpha is large, there will be little reflected energy, and this reflected sound will be weak, like in the red chart. If instead alpha is large, there will be a lot of reflected energy, and the reverberant field, this long tail of reflection which follow after the direct sound, this will be loud, will have a lot of energy, because very little energy is being absorbed by the walls. Okay? So, we divide the three possibilities which we were talking about at the beginning. The case where the free field is dominant because the reflected energy is very weak compared with the direct sound. The completely reverberant field, in which the opposite happens, the reflected energy is dominant and the direct sound can be neglected, and the third intermediate case, when none of the two contribution is negligible, you must consider both of them for estimating the total sound pressure level in the room, which will be affected both by the free field direct sound contribution and by the reverberant field, the reflected sound contribution. Let me start from the free field. The free field is easy. It's what you did learn in the previous lesson 1 week ago. You have a source characterized by a sound power level LW. The source will also have a specific directivity Q in the direction in which you are, because you are placed, if the source is not omnidirectional, if it has an emission which is very strong in that direction, but you are here, what matters to you is the directivity in your direction of listening, okay? So you must know the directivity of the source Q in your direction, and you can compute the sound pressure level with this very simple formula, which is the formula of sound intensity actually. So we equate it to sound pressure level because when you are far enough from a point source, the wavefront becomes almost flat, and so sound pressure level and sound intensity level assume substantially the same value in decibel. But correctly we should write here LI, sound intensity level, not sound pressure level, but they are almost the same. So this is equal to the sound power level plus 10 times the logarithm base 10 of the ratio of the directivity factor Q divided the surface of a sphere of radius d, where d of course is the distance from the source to the receiver. This is the distance d, is the distance along the direct sound ray, the direct sound vector connecting the center of the source with the center of the receiver. And this is the same formula which we have already learned past lesson, and this law tells you that the sound pressure level decreases by 6 decibels every time the distance d doubles. So it is the 6 dB decay law. Every doubling of the distance, you have a sound level decay of 6 decibels. This is the free field, okay? Excuse me. I have a little of cold. Second case is the reverberant field. In the reverberant field, the sound pressure level is the same everywhere in the room. It's the so-called diffuse field, where the reflections are so loud and so many, and the tail lasts for so long, that in practice, in every point you go, you will be reached by thousands and thousands of reflections, which statistically will carry you always the same energy wherever you are. So in a perfectly diffuse field, sound pressure level is constant and flat everywhere. Of course, this is a limit theoretical case. In practice, it's very difficult that you find a room with such a well uniform diffuse sound field. This only occurs in special rooms which are built in acoustical laboratories, which are called reverberant rooms. and they are shaped with strange and funny shape. They are not square, rectangular room. All the surfaces are never parallel each other, and there are diffusers inside scattering the sound all around, and only with this technology you can really get a perfectly diffuse sound field. In a normal rectangular room like the one in which you are now, if you measure with the sound level meter inside the room, you will not find a perfectly constant sound pressure level in every point. Okay? So the purely reverberant field is almost theoretical case, which can only be created in specially equipped and built room in the lab. In the real world, it does not exist. Instead, the free field, it exists in every room. If you are not too far from the source, the direct sound will always dominate. I don't know up to which distance it will dominate, but there is always a certain region around the source where the direct sound is dominant. So this is true in the real world. This is not. It's a theoretical case. But we are interested in this theoretical case because the theory, the statistical, the energetical statistical theory of the room, which was developed by a German scientist called Kutrup, in 1930, is a quite old theory, a statistical theory, tell you this formula, that the sound pressure level only depends on the total absorption area of the room. What is the total absorption area, uppercase A? Uppercase A is the product of absorption coefficient alpha multiplied by the areas of every surface in the room. If alpha is constant, as it happens in rooms which are all built with the same material, for example concrete, then the computation of the total absorption area is very simple. You just multiply your constant absorption coefficient by the total surface of all the boundaries of the room. If instead, in a room like the one in which we are now, there are different materials, then for getting the total absorption area, you need to multiply separately the absorption coefficient of each material by the area of each surface in square meters. For example, the floor of this room is concrete. Absorption coefficient of concrete, you go to a manual, you go to a book containing all those data, and you find that the absorption coefficient of concrete is very low, is very little, is around 0.02, 2%, very small. So the surface is big, is say for example 100 square meters, but the absorption coefficient is only 2%, so in this summation the floor will contribute only with 2 square meters. For example, instead the walls, these are gypsum boards, are much more absorbent than the floor. They have absorption coefficient around 10%. So if the total surface of the gypsum board here is again 100 square meter, but the absorption coefficient is 10%, they will contribute to the sum with 10 square meter, and so on. Do you know in this room in which we are what is the most absorbent material which is now inside this room? Do you have an idea? Look around. What is the most absorbing thing you are seeing around you? Any idea? Guess, try to tell. Try to guess, it's not a problem if you make the wrong guess. Do you think it's perhaps the glass there behind you on the windows? No, the glass is quite reflective. The floor we already said, which is reflecting.
This is projecting on screen here.
That's soft. That's probably quite absorbing. But it's not the most absorbing thing. Try to tell. What is the most absorbing surface here? The people. Exactly. You. Yourself. You are the great absorption surface in this room. The largest contribution to this submission. Each human body has an absorption area of approximately 0.5 square meter. If you are heavily dressed, like in winter, it can double. It can go to 1 square meter of absorption for each people in this room. So if now in this room there is 30 people, you get 30 square meter of absorption, which is probably the largest contribution compared to floor, ceiling, there's steel pipes here, these projection screen, doors, windows, and so on. Seat, chairs, the table, all the other things are less absorbing. In terms of absorption, human body is really a good absorber. Of course, this is a room where there is nothing really designed for absorption. If you go in the large classrooms instead, like Aula A, in those big rooms, the ceiling is treated. There is a room treatment made with a very thick absorbing plaster sprayed over the ceiling, and that is 30 millimeter thick, made of vegetal fiber, I think, and gypsum mixed together, and this is a quite absorbent layer with an absorption coefficient which is above 50%. It can be even 60 or perhaps 70% absorption coefficient of those acoustical plaster. And in that case, the surface is very big, and that becomes the largest absorption area in those rooms. Okay? In fact, the acoustic doesn't change a lot in that room if there is a lot of people inside or if there is not. In this room, if all of you come out, the total reflected energy grows a lot because your contribution to the total absorption is relevant. If the room was completely packed of people, I think this room is for 90 people, more or less. 90 people absorption would make this room very dead, will cause the total reflected energy to die almost completely. And then you hear only the direct sound. And that's the reason for which we need loudspeakers. If we should work with only the direct sound, my voice is not powerful enough. So we need the loudspeaker for when the room is full. When the room is empty, I can switch this off. And nothing changed, more or less. Or it gives only little contribution. The loudspeakers are for the full room, not for the empty room. In the empty room, the reverberant sound field will act as a loudspeaker, reinforcing the sound of my voice and bringing up the total sound pressure level. So, the reverberant field formula tells you a very simple thing. The sound pressure level is inversely proportional to room absorption. If you half the room absorption, the sound pressure level goes up by 3 decibels. 3 because it is 10 times logarithm. So if you remove half of the absorption, you get an increase of sound pressure level by 3 decibels. You can think also of the opposite way. You have a room where the noise is too loud. If you want to reduce the noise in the room, if you double the absorption of the room, you will reduce the sound by 3 decibels. Okay? It's a very simple rule. Of course, the rule is so simple because we oversimplify the reality, assuming the perfect diffuse sound field with the same sound pressure level everywhere. What happens in practice is a mixture of the two things. At every point in this room, for example, the sound you hear is the energy summation of the direct sound plus the reflected reverberant sound. And this way we define what is called the semi-reverberant sound field. The semi-reverberant sound field is a sound field in which you get the two contributions of the direct sound, this one. You see, this is in practice the same formula as for the direct sound only, and you get the contribution of the reverberant sound field, which again is exactly the same formula as the reverberant sound only. So you have both of them, okay, they sum energetically because these are incoherent, because the reflected sound arriving later than the direct sound lose coherence from it. This loss of coherence is good in terms of not having too much summation, but it can cause trouble, for example, to speech intelligibility, because the reflected sound being incoherent with my voice doesn't make it more clear as the loudspeaker do. The loudspeaker are perfectly coherent with my voice because we pick up the same signal here with the microphone. So they really radiate a signal which is perfectly coherent with the one of my voice. Instead, the sound reflected and diffracted and scattered all around the surface of the room lose this coherence with my voice. So it makes my voice more confused, not more crisp. And this causes some loss of intelligibility. So a loudspeaker is better than room reflection. Room reflection boosts the level of my voice, but reduce the crispness, the clarity. Instead, the loudspeaker increases both the sound pressure level and boosts also the clarity, the crispness, because it stays coherent. If it is a good loudspeaker, of course. If it is a completely broken loudspeaker, he will only make noise. It may crackling and making shock. It's not reproducing with fidelity my voice. Then is rising the level but not improving speech intelligibility. But if the loudspeaker is working correctly, then it will make the speech much sharp, much clear, much easy to understand. Okay. So these are the two contributions, and both affect the total level. But depending on distance, the first can be dominant or the second. At short distance from the source, when we have this propagation law of 6 decibels for each doubling of distance, here we are in the direct sound. Here you see many curves, because every one of these curves is written, is charted, is plotted for a different value of the total room absorption, A, large A. Here is 10 square meter, here it is 300 square meter, and here is 2560 square meter. So here it is increasing absorption. A is increasing this way. Okay? Let me choose one particular curve, for example this one, with a total absorption A of 160 square meter. Up to here, that is more or less 1 meter, you see, up to 1 meter, in practice, we have only direct sound. Excuse me. We only have direct sound because the contribution of the reverberant field is not changing the total sound pressure level in comparison with the direct sound. Instead, here on the right of this dotted line, you see this dotted line here, the curves are perfectly flat. Flat curve means the same sound pressure level everywhere. The level doesn't decay anymore, going far and far from the source. Stay constant. So this is the perfectly reverberant field, where the second formula is holding. Here the first formula is holding. Here the second is holding. In between, we have the semi-reverberant field. All this area here is an area where you should not neglect either the direct sound or the reflected sound. Both are contributing to the total energy, so we need to use the semi-reverberant formula. Okay? Let me look better at one of these curves. I think this is the same which we were looking before. The 160 squared meter curve. Okay, now the distance is in feet because this chart is taken by an American book, but don't worry about that. The concept is relevant for us. There is an horizontal line which represents the constant reverberant field. We call it LRev. And the reverberant level LREV is constant everywhere. Then we have this strike line here which show the decaying of the direct sound, and let me call it LD, the direct sound level. There is a special point here where the two levels are the same. That distance is called the critical distance, the distance at which direct and reflected sound have the same value. You could roughly say that the critical distance is the separation point between the free field region, which occurs at distance which are at least one third of the critical distance, to the completely reverberant sound field here, which occurs at distance which are at least three times or four times the critical distance. Okay? So if you are asked at the examination, define the critical distance. This is the correct answer. The critical distance is the distance from a source at which the direct sound and the reflected sound equate at the same value. Now we can easily compute the value of this critical distance because we have this formula of the semi-reverberant field. We know that the first term inside the bracket is the direct sound. We know that the second term inside the bracket is the reflected sound. By the definition of critical distance, these two terms here must be equal. So we can write the equality of the first term and the second term, and resolving this equation in D, we find the expression here of the critical distance. This formula here is very important because it tells you that the critical distance is increased by the directivity of the source. For example, in case of loudspeaker, the usage of very directive loudspeaker, like horn loudspeaker, which are often employed in very large sport arenas, for example, they can project the sound very far, and they push the critical distance very far, because the more directive the loudspeaker, the larger will be the critical distance. Oppositely, you see here alpha multiply S. You could write here also A, if you like, because A, large A, is alpha multiply S. Okay? A large value of A brings the critical distance to large distance, to be big. Instead, in a very reverberant room, when the absorption is small, the critical distance is very short, and after a small distance from the sound source, you enter the purely reverberant, perfectly diffuse sound field. And this is what happens, for example, in those reverberant rooms, which are built in the acoustical labs and which are used for certain kind of acoustical measurement, which rely on the perfect diffusion of the sound field for being sure that the measured sound level will be the same everywhere in the room. Okay? Any question? Okay. First lesson is good. Now we'll make a break.